Westchester Talk Radio is broadcasting live.
News, trends, and more.
No one knows Westchester County better than we do.
We are Westchester Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everybody, and we are back. I'm Bob Marone for Westchester Talk Radio. We're produced this afternoon by Shark Creative and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center. And we are at the offices of Hightower Westchester. Earlier, we spoke about estates, but today we're talking about, or this afternoon, estate planning. And with me, first of all, Richard Flahab, Private Wealth Advisor and Director of Research and Planning at Hightower. Good day, Richard. And John Barrett, Managing Director of Investment Sales. And we're going to get right into saying good morning to Richard. Richard, good day, or rather good afternoon. And John, good afternoon to you as well. Now, since we already know Richard and Hightower well, let me give you a quick background on John. John specializes in the sale of income-producing assets of all types, multifamily, retail, office, development sites, industrial and user properties in Westchester, Fairfield, and Rockland, and Orange counties. John also manages the investment sales team at R.N. Friedland, which includes Manhattan, the Bronx, and Queens. Since 2005, John has evaluated and marketed over $950 million worth of investment real estate in New York metro area, specializing here in Westchester County. Mr. Barrett has been featured or quoted in many publications, including the New York Times and Cranes New York. Now that we know who everyone is, let's dive in. But first, a quick hello to John Barrett. John, good morning or good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Bob. Thanks so much for having me. And Richard, I appreciate the invitation.
Well, I wanted people to see you. And by the way, pardon my good mornings. I'm used to doing morning radio, and sometimes my brain is hardwired. Welcome to both of you. Let's start with you, Richard. How has it been at Hightower and talking to clients through this interesting time?
Sure. Well, Bob, thanks again for having us on. And John, thanks for joining us. It's good to see you and see you're doing well. And we're hanging in here at Hightower. We've been obviously home for a couple months now. And thanks to technology, we have our screens at home, our printers. We have our Zoom meetings twice a week, Mondays and Wednesdays. It's been, just talking to clients, getting in front of this. It's been obviously a nervous and stressful time for people, both personally and professionally. And, we're just really trying to get in front of them, talk to them, make sure everything's going well. And, everyone's healthy. I think the next thing on the list is maybe a haircut. But other than that, everything's pretty good. So,
well, I'm thinking of getting into that business of cutting hair. If sponsors don't come back to the radio business soon. Anyway, it's good to see you again. Let's go straight to your guest, our guest, Hightower's guest, John. Can you talk to us about R.M. Friedland and your business, please?
Sure, Bob. We're a commercial real estate brokerage firm with offices in Westchester and Fairfield counties. Our structure is somewhat unique in that our brokers don't compete against each other in-house. The brokers or teams of brokers specialize by both a geographic area and an asset class. So what that means is that we have some brokers who specialize in leasing, whether that be office or retail. Other brokers specialize in industrial or multifamily sales. We recently launched our special asset platform where we will work with financial institutions on evaluating and marketing for sale distressed assets and non-performing loans. We will also work with owners on restructuring, recapitalizations, and workouts with lenders. It's funny, last December is when we initially thought of starting this platform up due to the Rent Reform Act that was passed last June. But the COVID-19 crisis only accelerated that build out.
Wow. Have you seen valuations change because of the COVID crisis?
There's not enough data points to support changes yet. What I can tell you is there are less market participants, and that's on the sell side and also on the buy side. Sellers want to see where things are going to settle out. Sellers, for the most part, still have February 2020 pricing numbers in their mind, whereas buyers are looking for the COVID-19 discount. And there's still a gap between it, and there's not enough data to support where we really need to be on pricing. So right now, we're in a price discovery mode.
I see that. Thank you very much. Richard, from an investment perspective, what are you seeing in real estate?
Sure. And it's, obviously a lot of what John mentioned, there's a lot of what ifs out there and unknown kind of scenarios around the virus. But, you know, from an investment perspective, I think it lends itself to, you know, those who are partnering with strong firms and folks who have been through these type of storms. I mean, obviously the virus is somewhat different, but, I think what you saw in Q1 and leading into Q2 here is somewhat of a term we like to use, throwing the baby out with the bathwater, where regardless of the type of asset you held, be it Class A, Class C, and all the way down the line, things have traded down, more so in the public markets and the listed real estate markets, where things are more mark to market. And that's where we as advisors look to, obviously, you know, be smart from an allocation standpoint, as well as, allocating correctly. We sold some of our public REITs back when this first broke, which turned out to be correct. And then on the private side, we've held in pretty well. And the big thing there is, how they're allocated and their time frame, right? Obviously things in the markets nowadays are really driven a lot by algorithms and computers and how quickly things trade down, up and down, and the volatility. But on the private side, and to quote Blackstone here, you've seen drawdowns on the listed real estate side of over 10%, about 16 times in the last decade. On the private side, and with some of the funds we've used, that's almost happened, zero to three times, so to speak. And really what that is just the makeup of their portfolios. Retail and hospitality, as far as the index are concerned on the public side, is over 10% in the double digits. And on the private side, it's going to be a lot less than that. So for us, it's a matter of obviously analyzing the sectors. You know, there are some sectors that have done a little bit better, that have less cyclicality, less exposure to some of the more affected sectors from the COVID standpoint. But I think the key is you want to avoid companies, and this is where underwriting really comes in perspective, right? Companies with stronger balance sheets that aren't over-levered have been able to weather the storm a little bit better. And to be honest, some of those companies that are going to be in bad shape, this is the opportunity for some of those companies that have maybe excess cash on hand or maybe an access to a credit facility to even buy some of those companies that are in trouble. So a lot going on, not just in real estate, but markets overall.
Absolutely. I just wanted to go back to John for something. I was thinking through some of the businesses he's involved in with commercial, five-star multifamily office, retail, non-luxury, et cetera. Are any of those taking a bigger hit than the others? Are you concerned about any of those at this point in time more than others?
Sure, Bob. On the commercial sales, and we track four main asset classes, and those buildings are multifamily, office, industrial warehouse, and retail properties. Mm-hmm. And they are all faring differently. I think the big winner here right now, both locally and on a national basis, is industrial, warehouse, last mile delivery, as well as data centers. They are all benefiting from the current situation that we're in. So there's been a lot of activity. The warehouse market has been shrinking in this area as more product has come offline in the Bronx and along the Hudson River for new development of residential housing. So we've seen a shrinking pie of available space, and the industrial warehouse sector has performed extremely well over the last few years. On the multifamily end, I think the market is bifurcated. You've got five-star properties that are doing very well. And the reason they're doing well is that most of the tenants in those units have not lost their job. They're working from home. So they're able to make their monthly rent payment. But if you look down at the three-star properties, a lot of the stuff that was built pre and post-World War II, they're not luxury product. Those tenants are either essential workers on the front lines, working in maybe nursing homes, assisted living facilities, in your supermarkets, or they've lost their job and they're unemployed. And so you've got the 2-star and 3-star not doing well in the multifamily end, and the 5-star doing extremely well. Retail is in a very tough spot right now. There are going to be a lot of companies, a lot of retailers who don't survive this at all. The office space needs to reimagine itself, much like the retail market has had to do over the last 10 years since they've been competing with Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
With retail, it had to be a highly touch experiential experience for somebody to go into a retail shop and not just buy from online. So I think that the office market needs to reimagine itself much the same way. And whether that's a more distributed labor strategy or work from home or a hybrid of the two, come in once or twice.
Change. What about rent collection and potential rent forbearance? How is that going to affect things?
Sure. So just as the different asset classes are performing differently, rent collections are also different when you look at the asset classes. If you had a retail center that was primarily grocery, drugstore, and medical, all of those places are still open. So they're going to be making their rent payments. Although business might be slower in everything but the grocery, they're doing well. But if your tenant mix was that of a nail salon, a gym, a hairdresser, they're completely shut down. So you're not seeing a lot of rent collection there. And I've got some statistics here. If you have a minute to let me pull up
this slide.
Sure. I've participated in so many webinars over the last 2 weeks. So rent collection, March versus April. New York City, this is a webinar I attended for large owners of New York City office properties. New York City rent payments were 95% in March, 92% in April, and 90% in May.
Whoa.
Nationally, though, retail rents, and this is according to National Real Estate Investor, retail rents had a 95% collection in March, so we were open for half of March, but dropped all the way down to 65% in April.
That makes sense.
And nationally, multifamily has trended down also. Rent collection was 94% in April and 85% in May. In Westchester, an owner of 12 non-5-star properties reported to me only last week that his collections for May and April was closer to 60%, and May was down around 50%.
Now, a couple of things that I noted. Most sellers in the market, by the way, here in Westchester, do they need to sell? Do they absolutely need to sell because of it? And then one other question, and I want to get back to Richard. Restaurants. I have a note here that maybe 25 to 50% won't make it.
That's both of those. That's true. And even as we reopen, and restaurants are open in Connecticut now, they're not open in Westchester yet. But for a restaurant to be successful, you had to be at 80 to 100% occupancy, flip the tables 2 to 3 times a night. If you can only operate at 25 to even 40% of capacity, it's going to be nearly impossible for a restaurant to be profitable. Now, landlords might not want to lose that tenant, so they might prop up that tenant for a while. And there are different ways of doing that.
But that gets me to my next question. Okay, are we going to see more selling? And if so, are not these prices dropping, or are they holding their own?
So velocity, or the number of buildings that trade in a given year, is determined by discretionary sellers. Those sellers who are not forced to sell. Those sellers are not putting their properties on the market. There's, death, divorce, taxes, management, headaches, and other opportunities are the main reasons why people would sell right now. and they would not be the discretionary sellers.
I see. Thank you. Richard, I know you're currently actively looking to buy a home in Connecticut yourself. Can you talk about the process and how has it changed during COVID? And to my last point with John, have you seen any price lowering, any price advantages for you?
So I wish, Bob.
I'm hoping for you, buddy.
Yeah. No, I hear you. You know, it's similar dynamics, you know, and this is all really from our perspective. You know, a lot of the numbers I quoted before were from Blackstone. This is really just from my eyes and my lens. I mean, there's kind of two dynamics at work, and John mentioned, you know, what those really are. I mean, it's people leaving dense kind of urban areas like New York and leaving and wanting to get out. You're seeing some of those people want to rent, but also buy, and then just supply. I mean, people were nervous to obviously list their homes, it seems, with the virus, and you're seeing a fraction of what we would normally see this time of year. I mean, generally after, you know, they say the Super Bowl, you get this kind of spring market that kicks up and more supply comes on and kind of balances things out. So, you know, with the result of those, you know, a combination of those two things, you're seeing things move fast and kind of at listing or above. And what I found was interesting is where we're looking, due to the fact that we, you know, we drive to work, my wife and I, we don't necessarily need to be near a train line or a direct commuting line to the city. And with people now working from home and, you know, those dynamics kind of changing, you're seeing people kind of spread out a little bit further as opposed to hugging those commuter lines. So towns that normally typically wouldn't be on people's radars for those who are going to be in the city working. If they're working from home more and not going into the city as often, maybe they can go a little bit further out and find better value. And as a result, you know, we're having some trouble. But, you know, when I think about, you know, people I've spoken with, I mean, there's a Rotarian. I belong to the Rye Rotary Club here down the road. And I spoke with her the other day. She got a call from a realty company out of absolutely nowhere. Her home's not listed, asking if she was willing to sell her home.
No kidding.
So, you know, there's a perfect example of kind of the frenzy that's going on.
It's kind of interesting. It's almost as if because the inventory, that is houses up for sale aren't at the same rate, prices are sort of holding. They're not dropping the way we might have thought. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, you know, honestly, the other thing I didn't mention too is just rates. I mean, you know, your rates are pretty competitive right now.
Yeah, I know.
So for people to maybe overextend themselves a little bit and buy a second home to get out of the city. I mean, who knows, right? I mean, you know, I'm not a true expert in the field, but there's a lot of dynamics that are working against us here, Bob.
Well, fortunately, we have an expert with us and more stories about your house hunt. And this is for both. So we've heard about some colleges turning to online learning, and I'm going to hire a real smart person to do it for me. How will that affect the student housing market? Start with John, please.
Well, there's really not much student housing in Westchester Fairfield market. There's dormitories and, you know, little private houses, one family, two family houses that students rent. If you go down south and out to California, you will find that there is a lot more student housing, which is investor owned. But it's going to be interesting because if you look at the California state school system, they've said they're not going back in the fall semester. But if you look at some other schools, Iona included locally, they're starting earlier, eliminating the fall break and breaking at Thanksgiving and sending students home until they return sometime in January with the hope and expectation that there isn't a secondary outbreak. So I think, and what Iona's doing a hybrid model.
Yes, they are.
Where there are going to be classes every day. And if you want to go to the class, you go to the class. If you want to do the class online, you can do the class online. And it doesn't make a difference. You know, as long as you do one or the other, you'd be counted as attending class. And I think that is probably, you know, it's going to work in the educational system. And I think it might work in the business system as well.
You know, but this creates real estate paradoxes for sure, though, because less kids are going to be needing to board. Top universities, people are still going to do that. But I think the small universities are going to have problems. But then again, a lot of them are turning to online. So I'm wondering, what's your opinion, John, of where that will settle? Where will that sweet spot be?
Well, I have four kids in college this year.
God bless you. What,
two of them.
Did you rob a bank?
Two of them were undergraduate and were on my dime. The other two are in graduate and paying for it on their own.
Okay.
So one is at NYU and I'm in a business program. And, you know, part of the MBA program is making connections with those other students.
Mm-hmm.
So the classwork can all be done fine. He's happy with that. But those connections and those deep friendships and business relationships are not there. The other one who's in graduate school is in art school in the city. And some of her work has got to be done in the studio. And that was all stopped. So she's evaluating, you know, do I go back next year? The two undergraduate, so they both have had not great experiences. My senior, who just graduated from a school that attracts international students in Pennsylvania, he was on spring break when they canceled the rest of the semester. He was only taking three classes. He had fulfilled almost all his requirements. He was very happy to be done. But then I had another who's only a sophomore, also in Pennsylvania, and he's in the thick of things with Algebra 2, Accounting 2, and things.
Oh, my.
And he really felt that the education he received was only 60% of what it should have been. So he and we are reevaluating whether or not he should go back in September if it's going to be online.
Well, I'd like to say this on your behalf, folks. Remember that Mr. Barrett has four kids in college. Please do business with him. Richard, you have a cousin who's involved with school, I think.
Yeah, so, and similar to kind of what John said, it's, you know, if it stays remote and online, right, there's a question on whether or not you should be paying a full level of tuition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, for my uncle, who's footing that bill, I think, you know, he's got a tough decision to make. And whether or not it impacts the price of college going forward, I don't know. Obviously, it's somewhat astronomical as we speak. But I think the bigger, you know, to talk more around the student housing piece from an investment standpoint, you know, I think schools that have, you know, the larger private institutions will do okay. There's obviously a demand there. The smaller private institutions, you know, there's some worry for certain schools. You know, is there a flood to stay closer to home with this, right? I mean, mm-hmm. things tend to work themselves out, but, you know, maybe in the meantime, you see people staying a little bit closer, maybe going more towards state schools with the lower tuition levels. Also, if the schools are located and the student housing is located closer to maybe a major city or a tertiary city where people would want to live and want to stay as opposed to somewhere out in the boonies, so to speak. But I think that one thing too to mention, and outside of maybe just college, is when what we'll do in terms of the elementary and the secondary education, right? The
middle school. Absolutely.
Because, you know, according to Strategis, the research outlets we use, about 40% of Americans have a middle or elementary school age children at home, childhood. Mm-hmm. How can you go back to work necessarily when that individual can't go back to school or in turn go to daycare or after school sporting activities? So that will be a big one to watch because I think there's a knock on effect with people working from home as well as just those other programs.
Well, we're going to get to that in just a moment. But first, I'd like to remind folks, we're talking with Richard Vilhav, private wealth advisor and director of research and planning at Hightower. And with Mr. John Barrett, Managing Director of Investment Sales at RM Freeland and has four kids in college, needs to be mentioned. I'm Bob Marone from Westchester Talk Radio. We're supported today by Shark Creative and also our friends at Entergy. You know Entergy Center up in Westchester County. And we are, of course, at the good offices of Hightower, or at least virtually. You're watching and listening today on Zoom. Richard, we're going to start with you with this one. You are working from home. You're headlocking a very nice photo. We can't see what the photo is. So too is John. Tell us what it's been like to work from home. And also, how much do you think this will affect the corporate life and corporate real estate?
Well, I think you know, funny enough, we may look like we're working from home, but we're actually two doors down from each other in our office.
Oh, you're in the office today. Okay.
So, I think it says a lot about what we think of working from home versus in the office.
So you went in there tonight. Go ahead.
Yeah. I think, you know, for myself personally, it's been, technology's obviously been a great help. I mean, we've been able to work pretty much as we would in the office, but for myself, and I know John, I mean, we met each other through a networking group, right? I mean, we tend to, you know, I don't want to speak for John, but we're out there pounding the pavement, meeting new people, networking, and that's probably the thing I miss the most. You know, I'm involved with Rotary, I'm involved in different organizations locally, so that's been obviously kind of taken away. You know, every industry is going to be affected by this differently, right? I mean, you're hearing, you know, Twitter, right? For example, they basically sent everybody home for good. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why you're seeing some of the medical office and you know, office space, you know, dropping in value and mm-hmm. what that looks like, who knows. But for us, it's a very much a people business. We meet our clients, we talk to our clients, we talk to different fund managers, we meet new people. So, you know, I can tell myself, Peter Roman, all the other folks here, Deirdre, we're kind of itching to get back in. And the collaboration too. I mean, you know, being able to just turn your head one way or another and, you know, whatever, walk down the hall. It's an important thing. And I think it matters in our business, but who knows how it all shakes out. I mean, you look after 9/11 and what happened there, you know, no one wanted to fly. No one wanted to be in the city. And there's certain cities across the country, New York, San Francisco, Chicago. I mean, these are very high in demand places where people want to live.
Mm-hmm.
What it does to the smaller or middle sized, the smaller sized tertiary cities, we'll see. But
well, let's go to John now on this one, because John, you must be assessing, John Barrett, the impact on real estate, corporate real estate, if a lot more people are going to work from home, and even, frankly, campus real estate. John?
Sure. So I agree with what Richard said. Every company is going to take it differently. I'm just looking at the headlines on another screen today, and I see Citibank is looking to suburban real estate, while MasterCard tells its workers to stay home. And Morgan Stanley says, we're greatly going to reduce our footprint in all locations. So every company is looking at it differently. I also agree with Richard when he said that certain industries need collaboration. The brokerage business is one that feeds off the energy of every other guy or girl mm-hmm. in the office. So to be in the office is great. Changes I see, you know, there'll be no more bullpen or, you know, cubicles. Everybody's going to need a lot more space.
Well, I want to ask you about that. For both of you. Hold that up just a second.
Sure.
Both of you come from the financial services sector as I do. There is not a trading desk in the world that even has cubicles. They are side by side. Talk about bullpen. They're yelling at each other. They're screaming to each other. There still is some open outcry on some of the exchanges. What are they going to do?
I think they'll have a very small work in the office presence, and most people will work from home. And unfortunately, this was kind of rushed on all of us. There was no preparation for it. And miraculously, everybody made it work. You don't hear about too many companies that were not successful in transitioning. The automobile sales industry was able to transition to a buy online, we'll deliver it to your house mode.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so they have. All right. Well, John, can you talk about some of the protocols around reentry into buildings?
Sure.
Lobbies, elevators, building, restaurant, cafeterias.
Okay. So when I walked into my office today, only to water my plants and participate in this because I have been working from home, there is now a plexiglass barrier surrounding the desk where the attendant works and checks strangers into the building. There's also roping that keeps you at least 6 feet away. We're going to have to live with that. We're going to have to live with, you know, luckily I'm on the fifth floor. It's not terrible, but if I was working in Manhattan, I don't want to walk up 40 flights of stairs. So, you know, it's going to be single person in the elevator.
That's what you can't do that. I mean, it's not sustainable. In an office building with 5,000 people in it, if we go up one at a time, I'll see you on Thursday. It's Monday morning. I mean,
yeah. Well, they're talking about staggered start times.
So you'll have some
people start at one time. So not everybody's going to be arriving between 8:30 and 9 anymore. Building restaurants and cafeterias, you know, where people congregate.
It's incredible.
Need spacing there.
Let's wrap this in a bow. I want to go back to Richard, but so many questions pop into my little brain. First of all, Richard, we're nearing our time together, the end of our time. What are your closing thoughts? But also, isn't it possible, too, that if there is, by the end of the year, some reasonable kind of either vaccine or something that can ameliorate the virus? Isn't it possible that things will go back to normal, or do you never see that happen?
You know, and I'm not a health expert by any means, but, you know, obviously we're pretty much glued to the TV and what's sure. going on in the world. You know, I think when we look, you know, longer term, you would hope and be optimistic that when you have all the greatest minds from not only the U.S., but the world working on something like this, a vaccine, that potentially there is some sort of a quicker turnaround. But, you know, obviously that's optimistic. We don't know what looks ahead to us in the fall, like John mentioned with Iona and things like that, what people are doing. You know, I think what we're hoping for is, you know, from a market perspective, is that things can correct itself and get back to normal. But again, from a time frame perspective, no one knows when that's going to be. But I think the biggest thing you have to do, and this is what I went back, going back to that balance sheet point I made, is that, you know, we here make sure we stress test portfolios. The financial plan is viewed through a lens, and the allocation is viewed through a lens where things like this can happen, right? Where we do go into a potential stagnation type period, or markets do drop, and you run it through, you know, what happened back in 2008, 2009. Mm-hmm. So for us, you know, we weren't too all that worried for many clients coming into this from an investment perspective, because we know we did our due diligence on the front end leading into it. You don't know when these things are going to hit. You know, they're black swans, so to speak. And
absolutely
come in from, you know, every couple of years, every decade or so. And but, you know, looking out, I think the big thing is, you know, people are healthy. We're doing the right things here in the office, as John mentioned, in our building. I think the world's going to change a little bit. I mean, you know, I heard yesterday that, you know, people might even need you know, vaccine cards to get into sporting events or, you know, concerts. So we could live in a very different world for the next 12 to 18 months. It's very hard.
You know, Richard, you have to remember, the host gets to ask the segue questions. You answered it before I asked it. We'll ask it of John too, which is, do you see us living in a different world? And I think you've answered it. And any more you'd like to say about, will we live in a different world, in your opinion?
You know, I think,
and then John,
you know, it's, you know, we're always changing. You know, I saw something online where it mentioned if you were born in 1900, and I thought this was spectacular. If you were born,
are you talking to me? Go ahead.
You know, long before our time, and obviously a very different world. Mm-hmm. But you know, you lived through the Great Depression, World War One. You know, a couple of years after that was, you know, World War Two, the Spanish flu. Then you had the Vietnam War. So almost every decade, you had something that really upended not only just your life, but the world's lives. So we've been pretty fortunate. I think people kind of tend to forget that. Society's changed a little bit in the sense that if your iPhone doesn't work for 10 minutes, you're in a stressful panic. But, you know, I think, you know, the way we look at it, and I heard this quote the other day too, is believe in America, believe in the world. I mean, you know, we've got a lot of good things going on here, and I think we have, you know, hopefully the right things to take us forward.
Well said. John Barron, if I may, do you believe we're headed to a different world? And then if you would, just give me a little bit of elaboration on, let's take corporate real estate, we'll just take these two for now, corporate real estate and residential, how will they change, John?
Sure. So I think we're living in a different world if 2 years from now there is no vaccine found yet, because people will still socially distance. Mm-hmm. Whether it be their jobs or their personal time, people are not going to want to be around other people until they feel safe. So, I mean, I would say overall, the market is cyclical, and sometimes the cause of market cycles is poor business decisions made by market participants or the government. Sometimes the market just runs its course. Here we have a health crisis that had morphed into a solvency liquidity crisis and now a full-blown economic crisis. We need to make sure that the short-term liquidity issue doesn't become a depression, and I think we will. I have the confidence in the country and in particular in the New York region. I was not born in 1900 either, but I have been through multiple cycles. I've been through the stock market crash of 87, the SNL crisis of the early 90s, the dot-com internet bubble of 2000, and the most recent financial industry collapse in 2008. This crisis is somewhat different because it was instantaneous shutdown of the country. The speed of the recovery is going to be based upon what effect the pandemic has on lenders. In other words, how badly were lenders impaired? Because if tenants are not making rent payments, it'll be difficult for many landlords to make mortgage payments. In the short term, banks are shifting away from lending and more managing risk. They also have increased the requirements on income, down payments, and credit scores. So until we have a vaccine, people will avoid crowds, and that means elevators, trains, and buses, as well as large-scale entertainment venues. Consumers will not fully participate in the economy, as I said before, until they feel safe. But, you know, having lived through and been in business in all of those down markets, each time we've come back even stronger. Certainly there are winners and losers, but I'm sure we're going to survive this and thrive.
Thank you very much. I'd like to thank both of you. Richard Flahab, always, always a pleasure. I wish you well in your housing hunt. John, it's been great to get to know you a little bit. I'm sure we'll talk again. Now, again, Richard's a private wealth advisor and director of research and planning at Westchester. John Barrett is the managing director of investment sales at R.M. Friedland. He has four children in college. God bless him and them. Gentlemen, stay safe, stay well, continue to be prosperous. I'm sure we'll talk again. I'm Bob Marone for Westchester Talk Radio. This has been produced this afternoon by Shock Creative and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center. And I want to give a special thanks out to Ronnie Grissom, who did some of the production work today. Thank you very, very much. Gentlemen, stay safe.
Hightower Westchester is a group of investment professionals registered with Hightower Securities, LLC, member FINRA and SIPC, and with Hightower Advisors, LLC, a registered investment advisor with the SEC. Securities are offered through Hightower Securities, LLC. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors, LLC. This is not an offer to buy or sell securities. No investment process is free of risk, and there is no guarantee that the investment process or the investment opportunities referenced herein will be profitable. Past performance is not indicative of current or future performance and is not a guarantee. The investment opportunities referenced herein may not be suitable for all investors. All data and information referenced herein are from sources believed to be reliable. Any opinions, news, research, analyses, prices, or other information contained in this research is provided as a general market commentary. It does not constitute investment advice. Hightower Westchester and Hightower shall not in any way be liable for claims and make no expressed or implied representations or warranties as to the accuracy or completeness of the data and other information, or for statements or errors contained in or omissions from the obtained data and information referenced herein. The data and information are provided as of the date referenced. Such data and information are subject to change without notice. This podcast was created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed are solely those of Hightower Westchester and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors LLC or any of its affiliates. Hightower Advisors do not provide tax or legal advice. This material was not intended or written to be used or presented to any entity as tax advice or tax information. Tax laws vary based on the client's individual circumstances and can change at any time without notice. Clients are urged to consult their tax or legal advisor before establishing a retirement plan.
You're listening to Westchester Talk Radio,
powered by Shark Media, a division of Shark Creative,
and made possible by Entergy, Indian Point Energy Center.
Visit SafeSecureVinyl.com.